Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and once again, we are talking about how recruiting works, this time with St. John's head coach, Justin Terry. Coach Terry, thanks for joining.
Terry, thanks for having me.
Excited to get into it and get a start in the same place that we always do. I almost forgot. I have adjusted this question. Do you consider recruiting to be the lifeblood of your program?
I'm going to say I've listened to a couple of these I was anticipating. Short answer is yes. And the adage I come back to is great players make great coaches. It's tough to do it. You can have everything in place. You can scheme up whatever you want to scheme up. You can have the best program built. But if you don't have the guys to do it on the field, the horses to do it on the field, on game days we sit on the sidelines and they're the ones that get it done. So it without a doubt is. And I think where my mind has been more recently, it always has been in recruiting, but as we've built this program to where we want it to go, our first 3 years, the word culture gets thrown around a lot. And to me, culture really at its core is just about the players and people you have in and around the locker room. And that's what recruiting is for whatever program you have, whether you're building a standing power. That's what we've been focused on in a big way, just bringing the right type of people in as you build and certainly bringing the right type of players that we can believe can win at a very high level.
I want to come back to that. It is definitely one of the topics I want to dig a little deeper on. But how do you describe yourself as an evaluator?
I think I'm in between qualitative and quantitative. I'm a background of a quantitative person, but I do believe I love our game because it's a blend of so many, as we all know, and I'm a football, basketball background as well. And where we're unique is you can be successful in so many different ways. And most positions on the field, even if we do believe in recruiting, I mean, offensively, we want a guy that can operate really successfully behind the goal. We want midfielders that can draw slides, midfielders that can hammer shots. You can still accomplish all those things in many different ways across the field. So I tend to look, especially as I just referenced a little earlier, where we're building with the right people first. I tend to look at things qualitatively more so. I think the one thing that I can say in recruiting, if I'm watching an individual and I'm starting to get more interested in them, we've been using the word energy a lot. There's like just an energy, no matter what setting they're in, that you can see from afar. It could be how they play the game. It could be how they celebrate. It could be how they're interacting with coaches and teammates on the sideline. So that's something that we look to, and I look to personally for sure. And I think a lot of it is just trusting your gut, where you've watched a lot of lacrosse, and when you do see something that pops, trusting that. Yeah, I know every environment is different. Every tournament, showcase, sometimes the level of teams and competition varies. But when you see something, when you see a shot that looks a certain way or a guy that sticks his foot in the ground and that looks a certain way, you just got to kind of trust it and then do more digging as you go.
So you set up the return to recruiting culture question pretty perfectly by saying that you feel like you have a quantitative background, and then also saying that energy is the thing that is visible that can be a translation into a cultural pillar, cornerstone, because it's really hard to quantify the exhibition of energy. And equivalently, it's pretty hard to define the margin between talent and contributor to culture. So that's where I want to go next, is if a player is coming into your program and or if you're considering an offer and you're like, he's probably a 7.5 out of 10 in terms of talent, but he might be a 5 in terms of culture contribution, whereas this guy might be a 6 in terms of talent, but he's an 8.5 in terms of culture contribution. How do you try to balance that?
Yeah, it's challenging. And as you know, it's a very imperfect science. And I think from the player perspective, we're always going to recruit guys that we believe can be contributors in some way, shape, or form. We just don't have the luxury of not doing that, especially with the roster cap coming. And we're not an ACC where everyone's knocking down their door and you are turning more guys away. We are recruiting guys to win and compete at the top of the Big East and beyond. And to get those guys and to stack up against those teams, we have to take guys that we believe can develop into an elite level player. So I think I always come back to them having an elite level characteristic in some way. So as long as it's something that we know we can work with to turn them into, it could be an elite role player, it could be an alpha, it could be any position across the board. But if they do something in an elite way, we believe that we can develop the rest of them if the things that make them a great culture contributor, they have a tremendous work ethic, they absolutely love lacrosse, then they're not burnt out from lacrosse. We know that they're going to work. And all the touch points you get from people around them, if those things are telling us that they can turn into the player and build off of that maybe elite trait or untapped potential, a lot of times those things align where the things that we think can turn them into a great player are the things that we also believe are going to make them a great member of the locker room, because that's where we put all those guys together that are chasing the same things, and that's how you build it.
So how has it changed or evolved as you head into year four? Or built? That's probably the best word for it. How has it built on itself?
Yeah, we've I think now the way we've looked at it, and we have from the very beginning focused so much on bringing in the right type of individual, the right type of young man, because that you want to, it's just my belief, if you want to build for long-term sustained success, you want to win at a high level and stay there, everything back end has to be built before you built the stuff on the front end. So I think early it was really narrowing down and finding out, hey, these are at St. John's, these are going to be our pockets. These are going to be where maybe we're going to find more of the guys that we believe fit who we are. And I think it was also my first full-time job recruiting. I was at Army, so I knew there was a national lacrosse presence there because of how national that university is. But even more so now, having been around a couple of different places, there's a lot of really high-level athletes playing the game now, as you know, all over the place. And for us, it's just finding the right mix of, hey, where are we going to find these guys that fit St. John's, that like the atmosphere of kind of being in the greater city area? And yes, we have all this talent and the number of people that play in our backyard, and we got to get the right people from there. But at the same time, there are a lot of blue-collar places and some blue-collar cities and areas of the country that are playing the game now that also really fit what we do. And we've seen that evolve over the course of the last 3 years. And now having more of those guys on the roster, we're seeing it start to come to fruition where those guys are not only we think going to develop into really high-level players. Some of them played a lot for us early in their careers, and we are very excited about where they're going. But even more so than that, we're seeing what they're doing off the field. We're seeing how tight they are. We're seeing how they're just changing everything in and around the program as they go.
St. John's is unique from a campus environment standpoint. It's what you just touched on, being in the greater New York City area. How do you describe the way that is appealing and an asset to a lot of prospects versus it being unappealing or scary to others?
Yeah, it's it kind of back to, I guess, what we're just talking about, where you need to really want to be. We want guys that want to be here. We want guys that love that. And the word energy, again, like that have that kind of big city energy to them. Not that everyone, our guys aren't going into Manhattan every weekend. They're really using that occasionally and sparingly when they want. But just the vibe of being around a greater city and loving what that has to offer versus, and there are some guys that just doesn't fit. It just doesn't work. And they come on campus, yeah, and hey, this is maybe this isn't for me. And I think we've been very particular about, number one, the importance of getting them here, because it is even very different from what people perceive it to be versus what's actually here where we are in Queens. And then when they are here, really drilling down like, hey, what's going on through the day? Did you enjoy meeting the guys? How was it coming in? How was it feeling the area out? How was it just walking through campus? What's different than you expected? And if we go through continued conversations and you can kind of tell when someone's half in, half out, and you can kind of tell when guys are all about it. And we just, from we're recruiting a larger mass of people, it's purely for saving the coaching staff's time too. We're going to pursue the guys that want to be there.
Another element that makes St. John's unique is basketball, right? Both in terms of the historic success and the fact that it was New York City's basketball team in the 80s, and there's so much history with respect to the Big East Conference, and then also contemporarily with Rick Pitino and the recent elevation of the program. How has basketball fit into the way in which your program has developed?
I think it's shown... It served as a blueprint, and I know I tell all the, certainly the families and kids, like, I wish I was Rick Pitino and I can turn it around in 2 years the way he did. Fortunately, maybe the NIL money that they have at their disposal may be a little bit different, but it has served as a blueprint. And more so than anything, it's shown, I think, the commitment of our administration up to the highest levels, our university president, Father Shanley, who came from Providence, really built there the same way that he's doing here. And there is a renewed, I think, just identity to St. John's that basketball has brought back and a lot of the other sports alongside of it. But we're lucky to have an administration that believes in the value of athletics in the greater university mission, the Vincentian mission. And they see lacrosse because of where we are and basketball. I mean, our enrollment numbers spiked off of a Big East championship, regular season tournament championship. And they see lacrosse because of where we are. That's another sport where, and it's true at a lot of lacrosse playing schools, when lacrosse is nationally relevant, that is boosting the profile of the school. So just having that support, using a blend of, in the recruit back to the recruiting process, you know, Coach Pitino has gone kind of all the way on the transfer side of it, and it's different in basketball for sure, but using a blend of high school recruiting and effective recruiting of some transfers to put together our puzzle, it's been certainly cool to learn from. My office is up in the corner of Carneseca, and our door's open. Coach is mic'd up for practice, and you hear everything that he's doing, but he's also been extremely helpful and receptive to helping out all the teams because he knows how much of a presence he is and how important the basketball program is to everybody. And I think in the modern college landscape, we'd be foolish not to be fully behind them in all their successes because they're certainly helping everybody else as they do it.
Last question, looking backwards before we start looking forward. And you mentioned the, you know, prospect of stacking wins. How much do you bring up or how relevant is the Kieran McArdle era teams with respect to showing what's possible at St. John's?
Yeah, we reference Kieran and his contemporaries frequently. I'll often tell the story, my first job in coaching at 24 as Chris Gabrielli's volunteer when it was Brett Holm, John Galloway, and myself. We were at the very beginnings of that program, and we're
at Providence.
At Providence, and we played Kieran's team in 2014. They beat us 14-7, doubled us up, and like whooped us. And that wasn't even their best year. 2013, Big East championship game against Syracuse, top 10 nationally in the country. And it's been a while since that time, for sure. But what that told us, and what that told certainly myself and all the guys that have joined us now, is it's possible at a really high level. And even more so now, the university and the leadership is in a place it's never been before. And even higher levels are achievable. So that's every program is different when they're going through recruiting. You have some that have certainly done it and the history is there. You have some that the history is out there to be built. And so we very much appeal to that. And we want those guys who are not afraid to work a little harder and do a little more, knowing that those firsts and the history to be made can be that much more rewarding on the back end.
So spinning it forward, you mentioned the nature of the changing college lacrosse landscape and opting in. I am on the record saying that I was surprised at how many programs and conferences opted in. That being said, the Big East was always an obvious candidate to do so. And it's very likely and seems pretty clear that it's going to be the case that it is very beneficial for basketball. How do you regard the effect that it has had or will have on your program?
I think it presents more opportunity in the future. I don't know, and really landscape-wide, how much it affects the sport of lacrosse right now. I think we're fortunate where I know a lot of programs are just making sure, hey, protecting my resources. I'm hoping nothing's getting touched and I don't have to worry about that just with the support that we've got, which certainly excites me for where we're going. But, I mean, going forward, the revenue share idea, it certainly is very much into football and basketball, as everybody knows and is finding out more about it. There's only so much money to go around, and raising that money is a tough proposition to begin with. But it opens up, I think, for potential in the future. Certainly opens up. We got to do more work if we're going to continue to, whether that is add scholarships or find other ways to be creative. The age of paying players is here at the college level, and college lacrosse is, I think, just dipping its toe into it now. I think we still very much realize that we're an Olympic sport, and what we're doing goes well beyond the wins and losses we're getting on the field. So we're kind of in the middle of it right now still, and I think everyone realistically, and I'm sure all the conversations that you've had, 2-3 years from now, we could be having a completely different conversation. So,
no doubt.
Yeah.
But the one thing that we know is here, or at least is here for now, is a 48-player roster limit. And you can evenly divide that and bring in 12-player classes. Still a little bit of, you know, lingering leeway with the designated student athlete tag. But how has it affected the way that you've built out the 26 class in terms of the number of players that you've taken? And then how has it informed how many you're targeting for the 27s?
Yeah, it's now being a couple years into really the true emergence of the transfer portal and how many guys are in there. We've taken transfers every year so far at St. John's. That's going to be part of our DNA as we go forward. I would say we were a little more aggressive early in the first couple years with the amount than we will be going forward, because we were very much building and just trying to bring in as much collective, not only the right type of people, but then certainly collective talent, athleticism that we could. But going forward, there is always going to be a place for one or two of the right guys of class that there's some value for having played and been successful at this level. Certainly your program needs to be in a place, and I think we're on our way there to getting the guys that have had that type of success at this level. Even this year, we think we have a couple that we've got some transfers from some other Division I major programs that we think can contribute pretty early in their careers. But at the same time, we do really believe in the guys we get in the recruiting process, because it still is a longer one. There's more leeway and runway to evaluating those prospects generally than the transfers. So if we're with the transfers, we need to be very, very keen on the individual. We need to have usually a very strong connection and relationship to, it could be their former coach at the collegiate level. It could be someone personal to them that really knows them and really the situation, why they're leaving and what they're looking for. So we'll always have room, I think, in every class. And I think the way it's affected the 26s and 27s, in 26, I could say if we weren't sure on a guy, even if the young man had some great interests, we liked him. If there was anything that we were still in doubt, instead of maybe in the past where it's, okay, we need to fill this spot if we're looking out at our roster 2-3 years from now, the thought process now that's in your mind is, hey, there's a chance we can get a transfer in the next 2 to 3 years to fill that position. And so I think we've maybe at the tail end been a little less aggressive than we have been in the past. And in the 27 class, I think now going forward, you are looking at a situation where you have the 48-man roster cap and 1 to 2 a year where maybe you're not recruiting 12 or 13 of in every class. Maybe it is a little more like 10 and 11, 10 to 11 or 11 to 12 when you're planning for just natural attrition that occurs and then maybe a transfer or two coming in.
So how does that affect your regard to position distribution relative to when you might have been bringing in classes that were in the 15, 16, 17 type range? How do you allocate, you know, this is what we want? Or is it just so dependent on what you're losing that you tend to be, you know, really flexible?
I would say it's a little more dependent on where you are as a program. So coming in early, we over-recruited early. We, again, getting as many guys that we believe, and we have a locker room full of even the guys that were here when we took over. They're our guys through and through. They're the right type of people. But getting more guys that continue to really embody who you are and what you're trying to be. So our first two classes were bigger. We're balancing that out now as we go through with the next couple, 26, 27. But I think as by the time we get to a place where now the classes are pretty balanced, which we would like to get to a point where we're not one big class and then of 15, 16, and then a small class of seven or eight, it allows you to, I would say, in recruiting, be a little more strategic and be a little more, okay, we're going to recruit close to a starting lineup each class with maybe a specialist difference here or two, or a certain type of one more LSM versus a close defenseman, one more attackman versus a midfielder. I think that makes the recruiting a little bit simplified as you go over it year to year. But I think that's
when you say simplified, do you mean oversimplified or do you mean simpler, like easier?
Simpler. Okay. Where, yeah, where you're not, hey, we need to go find seven offensive players in this class, right, but only two defenders. Okay, well, this is a pretty good defensive class, and I would love to take 3-4 guys that are really interested, right, but I can't because of our roster numbers. So I think that what comes up in each class is always always a little bit of a mystery until you're like a year and a half to a year out. So having those balanced classes allows you to still, hey, I'm only taking 2 offensive guys this year, and there are 4 studs that all have interests. Like, we could be in a really good position with them, but we can only take 2 of them.
Right. One of the conversations that I really enjoy is the notion of recruiting to build a team to compete in your league. And your league has had a maybe sneaky amount of change in terms of, you know, certainly with new head coaches, at the very least relatively new, given your arrival at St. John's with Marquette, Providence, and Denver, although Matt Brown doesn't feel like a new head coach. And then equivalently, you know, Simon Connor's departure at Villanova, you know, has had a little bit of an effect on that staff as well. So with the caveat being that, you know, the competition in itself has changed a little bit during your tenure, how have you approached the idea of building a roster to compete against those 5 opponents?
There has been a lot of change. It's been really interesting as you look at it and you just look back at the past couple of years. I think one thing that's been consistent, and you just look at the rosters in the pros the past couple of years, there are a lot of Big East lacrosse players that are not just on rosters but are playing in the PLL on game day rosters, making a big impact. And it's across, I mean, Matt Campbell, Villanova, Mason Woodward, Marquette, and then you have all the guys from Denver, you have all the guys from Georgetown, I mean, Providence. And
Ryan Bell is on the doorstep.
Yep, Ryan Bell there. Brian Kelly is on the Cannons roster. He just got re-signed for this coming year. So there's a really high level of athlete playing lacrosse in the Big East. And I think people see it maybe even more so after they graduate than they do as much. Like even leading into the NCAA term, I think people are surprised at how athletic some of these teams are. So for us early, that was the name of the game. We need to get more athletic. We need to get faster. We need to get more explosive. When you looked at Denver's starting lineup compared to, I would say, ours in the first year, like, whoa, they have trees and they have guys that are built. So even kind of when we were talking about, hey, we're going to look for guys that do one thing in an elite way, early on for us, a lot of that was we need guys that have some elite athletic attribute that we can throw out on the field that are maybe a multi-sport guy. We recruit a ton of almost exclusively multi-sport athletes that have some upside that we can develop, but have competed for a high-level program, whether it's lacrosse or another sport, and are going to go out with an expectation of, I'm going to line up against this athlete and I'm going to try to beat him. And that is, number one, helped us significantly just ramp up, I think, the level of play, but also just the level of competitiveness to be in the mix and in the middle of the Big East. So that was a big-time focus early for us.
Shifting to be a little bit more individualized or personal on your background, how do you describe the way that your own recruitment to Duke influences how you go about recruiting?
Yeah, it was extremely people-driven. Coach Danowski, and I have a great relationship with Coach Pressler since being in the coaching industry specifically. Brad Ross is one of my great friends in coaching, was a line mate at Duke. He was recruited by Coach P, worked for him, so I got to know him pretty in depth. But I always give him some flack because he never recruited me when he was at Duke. Coach Danowski was at Hofstra, was a Long Island guy. I was very much a late bloomer. I'm not the fastest person still to this day, but I was really slow in high school all the way up until about junior year. And Coach D, when he was at Hofstra, my father was a 32-year defensive coordinator at West Islip High School, along with Scotty Craig as the head coach. We had a relationship and knew the Danowskis, and he just knew the program well. And so when Coach got the job down there, and Coach Caputo kind of hand in hand with him, we knew Coach Caputo for a very long time. I went down to Durham as a South Shore public school, blue-collar Long Island guy, and Duke University was almost a foreign country to me. But the people there, and Coach Danowski, Caputo specifically, and then Matt and a bunch of the guys in the locker room, and the guys that we knew that he would recruit, had a major influence in why that ended up being the place among some of the others. So for me, it still is, and even in coming and taking the job at St. John's, and I think the thing I try to, whether the family and the young man commits to us or goes elsewhere, walls and buildings and, I mean, even location to a degree, that's all great. And you want to have a school that's going to set you up with the opportunities that you want to pursue. But you're going to be spending an inordinate amount of time in your experience with the people that you're around as teammates and the coaches that you're going to have. And they're, again, in that Olympic sport model, they're going to have a massive influence on who you are and what you become in whatever career you end up going into anyway. You better really enjoy being around them. And it's tough to pick a place just based solely on a coach because, as you know, that can sometimes be – things change over time. I know we were just talking about all the change in the Big East. But you can still get a great feeling of the people in and around a program by being there, by seeing them, by talking to them. So I think for me it was just about fit. We very much recruit the same way. Like St. John's is different because of the people here. We have facilities. We have proximity to the city. We have those things at our disposal. But the people are what make your 4 years and certainly your time well beyond that too.
Keeping in that vein, you mentioned your coaching stops at Providence and Army. You also came to St. John's immediately proceeding from Michigan and had a stop at Harvard as well. What did you learn from each of those points in your career, and who were the influences that helped you learn those things?
Well, I'll start with, and we're actually, we're about to head up there tomorrow for a joint practice tomorrow. We've scrimmaged him every year since I've been here at St. John's. But Coach A and what he did at what he's currently doing at West Point, I don't think there's – you talk about people. I don't know if there's a coach in the game or a mentor that I've been around that cares more deeply about his people than Coach does. And I think what I also saw, especially early in my coaching career, is I think there are very few people who fit the program and institution they're at more than Coach fits West Point. And so I learned a great deal and still do learn a great deal from him. Have an immense respect for him and what the program has done. I think early in our recruiting there, it's since changed. He's getting 4 stars and 5 stars, and I got to tell him to leave some for the rest of us at this point. But it was also a numbers game for us. It was, hey, how many guys can we get on campus? How many guys can we uncover from every which part of the country? And it was a, hey, does he have the right mentality and an elite trait that we can develop into being a player at the top of the Patriot League and that can compete with the teams that are regularly on that schedule?
That's a really interesting comparison that I don't think would have immediately jumped to mind. But the notion – so effectively, my point is that if your institution is pretty unique, right, in the way that, you know, a service academy is about as unique as it gets, and then – the kind of urban location of your campus makes it very unique, like we discussed, then what it does is it kind of bifurcates your prospects into folks who are just way more likely to be at one end of the pole or the other, right? Like, you know, there are Army kids who are just like, I want to go to Army. It's all I want to do. And so what that challenge is determining whether or not they're good enough or good enough fits, right? And then there are other kids who are like, you know, probably either never thought about a service academy or assumed that it wasn't for them. And then the question becomes, all right, well, now we either have to decide if it's worth it for us to try to show them that it is for them and what those merits and benefits are. You know, and then equivalently, it's like, do you want to go to school more or less in New York City, right? There are some kids for whom it would be like, oh my God, yeah, that sounds incredible. And then there are others who are like, yeah, I don't know. That's not what I envisioned my college experience being like. And so similar challenge, right?
In some ways it is. It forces you to cast a wider net and wider pool. And I think that's one thing that I know when we were trying to recruit at a higher and higher level at Army, it's you're at a place where you want people that want to be there without a doubt. Because to make it through, you have to really enjoy being there. And I think that goes back to what coaches created and just the people around you on the team. But at the same time, if you want to continue to level up and raise the profile of the program, get better and better players, compete nationally, you can't settle just for looking at that group. You got to go find players that you really like and show them and tell them why this is the place for them. Maybe knock down some perceptions that that existed. And just like it is for us at St. John's, at West Point, the most important piece, and it still is, just get them on campus. When you're on campus and you actually see everything that's going on, your eyes are opened. And in some ways, some of those challenges for us right now are very similar. Is okay, we're not a campus in the middle of the city. That's what a lot of people believe and perceive. Get on campus. You see where we are. You see it's residential. You see Big East Athletics and the facilities that we have. And it does open the eyes of some people where I think we have gotten some guys that are going to be really influential and impactful for us that maybe on September 1 or going into it didn't have St. John's at the top of their list or maybe weren't even considering it. So it takes a little more work for sure, but also be successful at a place like this, you got to be willing to do a lot of work.
What'd you learn at Harvard?
I think it was really cool to see Coach Wojcik. I've never been to that point around someone who was an alum of the place that he was working at. So just the institutional knowledge that he had of the inner workings of everything of what a Harvard lacrosse player and a Harvard man was and learning and hearing that from him, I think was really influential. And fortunately, it was a short stop. It was only 1 year, but that was a big time learning experience.
And how about Michigan?
Honestly, a lot of what we're doing in building and rebuilding a program and trying to take it to the next level. I got from Coach Connery, Coach Ski, the guys who are still doing it at a really high level at Michigan. I got to Michigan in Coach Connery's second year. He had taken the program over from John Paul, who did yeoman's work to get a club program, which was a national championship club program, elevated to Division One and to a place where it was starting to compete. But there was also another level of rebuild and behind the scenes things. I would say there were just Coach Connery getting his guys in, guys that were ready for Big Ten lacrosse, and to be there in years 2 through 5. I saw a lot of, number one, how to do things just at a really high level with his experience at Maryland and a lot of the Coach Tillman influence and everything that they do. And then also just really, really high-level recruiting, which was a lot of fun. That experience of recruiting the absolute best guys in the country and convincing them why, again, a program that is building and maybe hadn't done it yet is a better path than some of the blue bloods. So it was a very cool and competitive environment in all aspects of it. And it was certainly a lot of fun to be a part of.
Quick sidebar, and this doesn't necessarily touch on recruiting, although in some ways it's as much about recruiting as any question could be. What was it like to watch that fruit come to fruition while you weren't a part of the program, seeing them, make back-to-back quarterfinal runs?
Wow, haven't been asked that one yet. It was really rewarding. I was just watching it. My first season at St. John's, we didn't win a game. And we still, I think it was validating in a way where I was watching guys that certainly I work with, Coach Connery, Coach Ski, Bryce Clay, Mikey Bame, all these guys that I was very fortunate to be with for a number of years in their career, hoist the school's first Big Ten trophy, knowing the work that they put in that went into it, and just kind of a dual-sided feeling of emotionally being really, really happy for them, certainly being bummed that I wasn't a part of it. Of course, as any natural competitor, you would be. But so happy for Coach Connery, Coach Ski, and everything that they did to get that program to where it now is. And then also, probably a day or two after that, sitting back and just realizing, I'm really happy with where I am right now. I'm really happy with what we're doing at St. John's. I just came off a season, which I never thought I would be a part of one, where we didn't win a game, but there were so many successes had in that first year off the field. We knew the path we were on, and that was we knew what was coming in front of us, where it was validating in a way, where I was just really, really happy where I was and where we are right now. So I wish they keep winning Big Ten championships and beyond, because I know what they're capable of, and certainly I'll always be rooting for them from here.
Shifting back to talking about the folks, how about in your coach's office? First of all, what's it like working with your brother?
Unique. I got very lucky because I think he was in such a great situation with Greg Raymond at the time at Hobart. They were regularly, NEC championship game knocking on the door. But I had a card in my back pocket, which is his wife, Courtney. My sister-in-law is also a Long Island girl. So when I took the job and I brought it to him, I knew he was hearing another voice in the back of his mind too. But I do think in some degree, we were kind of always hoping our paths would cross in the coaching world at one point or another. So to be able to do it, to come back pretty close to home to do it, I think I made my mom pretty happy that both her boys and now her grandchildren are around. But it's all I've never, ever known in building a program and the way you do it. You have people that you trust innately. And to kind of go into what we knew was going to be a very challenging environment, was going to be a really tough and tall task. I wanted to do it with people that I know I could go to war with and would have my back no matter what, and would challenge me and all of us challenge each other in the office. And I don't know if you've ever been up here, but our office environment is completely open. So we better really enjoy the people that we're around if we're going to get some stuff done and be productive. But I think that's just also how we've built and how I've ever known is building with a family first environment and really caring about the individual and spending a lot of time together. It makes it more fun when you got people like that with you.
And then opening it up a little bit, I was a goalie. I am fascinated mm-hmm. by goalies as coaches. And yeah. I don't know what your third assistant played, but I do know that your two other assistants were goalies. What has that meant for how you guys have developed a approach or way of seeing the game?
So unfortunately, the one assistant coach, Christian Klipstein, who I think the other goalie that you're referencing, he's actually yeah. just recently gotten out of college coaching, unfortunately. Mm. So I'm very lucky to have David Droshak on staff, who, like myself, was not a goalie. But having two of them in the office for three straight years made for some very interesting conversation, as you can imagine. I think it made us, number one, really flexible as a staff, where Kyle, and I'm sure you feel this too, Kyle came in as a defensive coordinator from Hobart, and after 3 months, because of all that we needed to do in and around the program to, I mean, really build in every facet, I felt like I need to be separated from both sides of the ball, at least for the time being. And so Kyle went over and coached the offense. And while we were planning on and him and Christian working jointly and Christian assisting him with the defense, Christian proved so capable that we said, Clip, the defense is yours. It makes for awesome conversation about everything, sometimes things you would not even come close to thinking about. But everybody saw the game from a pretty holistic lens where everyone was comfortable talking about offense. Everyone's comfortable talking about defense. And it made us see the game and think about the game from very different ways. And we needed to kind of ramp up our level of competition early on. So it's been cool. It's been really unique for me where, thankfully, that's the only position group I haven't coached yet in my career. I've warmed up and shot on goalies plenty, which I enjoy. But having those two and still now having Kyle as a true goalie coach, which I think is so invaluable for our unit, and having him then in the recruiting process to really find what he wants and certainly what he wants for his defense, it's been some interesting times for sure. Two goalies in one office. So, I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, I mean, it's like I've been a part of goalie rooms where, you know, there's always this bizarre internal tension because pretty much only one of you is going to play. Yeah. And then you kind of extrapolate that onto a coach's office. It's the complete opposite, right? Where now it's just a competition of ideas. And I can imagine that the ideas in general are probably a little quirkier than they might otherwise be.
Yeah, they flow. We get creative. We're not afraid to try something new and different. That's for sure.
So as we record this on September 25th, it'll post on September 26th. This is the last of this year's series that I've got planned. So no pressure, Justin. But as the final question, how do you describe the way that the last month has unfolded for you and your program since September 1st?
Going back to the theme of this podcast, Terran Recruiting, it's been fun to, I think, see a lot of just get more informed of the process that we've put in place and see a lot more of it come to fruition. As you get, every coach will tell you, things are just different as you get your guys on campus. And we're about 2.5 classes of our guys on campus now. So to see things naturally evolve even over the past month where every team is unique. We had our first full class on campus last year. 9 or more of them played in every game as freshmen, which I hope I don't have to have another stat like that coming off another year in the future. But to see those guys come back as sophomores, as different people, to see this next crop of freshmen come in and show all the same characteristics that group did, and begin to bond and form some pretty cool relationships with them already. And to see the seniors and the upperclassmen just continue to grow. It's been really cool. This part of the fall is very interesting because you're still really finding out who you are. Tomorrow we're going to practice with Army. I think we're there maybe 2 weeks in, we're a week in. I think everyone's going to go in feeling underprepared because it's still a competition with an outside team, but we're going to find out a lot of who we are there and in the week after that, and the week after that when we start scrimmaging in the fall. So it's the recruiting with 9-1 hitting certainly presents another whole side of that side of it where you're thinking about the future. But while doing that, we're trying to stay really present and building and developing this team because we're excited about this year coming up.
Well, Justin Terry, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Great conversation, and look forward to watching the Red Storm take the field this fall and in the spring.
Awesome, Terry. Thanks again for having me.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.